Welcome to Native America Calling. From Studio 49 in Albuquerque, I'm Tara Gatewood. Native people on rural reservations often have ready access to culture, family, and the land. Generally, Native urban residents have more choices for jobs, entertainment, and social interactions. Each has its advantages and disadvantages, although statistics say overwhelmingly, more Native Americans live in urban environments. Coming up in the next hour, we'll learn how urban and rural designations guide funding for some social service programs. We go live right after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Health advocates from Indian Country discussed climate change at the recent American Public Health Association conference in Atlanta. Native people shared how tribal communities are being impacted. Melinda Tuhus reports.
April Taylor is a sustainability scientist for the Chickasaw Nation in Oklahoma. Taylor works with 68 tribes across New Mexico, Texas, Oklahoma, and Louisiana on issues such as tribal water rights, sea level rise, flooding, droughts, and wildfires. She says another problem is the changing calendar for the appearance of different species, including those that tribal nations rely on for food or cultural uses.
And there's an indigenous phenology network, and phenology is basically the timing of the seasons and when things change. And so they're seeing some of those changes happening, you know, months earlier. And so they're trying to figure out if that, what that means for their culture, for the communities. Do we change the ceremony?
Michael Brubaker works for the Alaska Native Health Consortium. Brubaker says the 374 residents of Kivalina on an island in the far north of Alaska are facing threats from climate change. Their village is eroding and relocation efforts are underway.
Typically in winter, the community is frozen in, protecting the village from winter storm surge. However, in recent years, the freeze-up has been delayed or has not occurred at all. This exposes the coastline to extreme storm events.
Brubaker says relocation will cost an estimated $1 million per household, and in the meantime, residents plan to build a rock barrier to provide a modicum of protection and take other steps to promote resiliency. The conference attracted 12,000 public health professionals and students, mostly from the U.S., but also from 40 other countries. For National Native News, I'm Melinda Tuhus.
A U.S. Army combat veteran in South Dakota is training shelter dogs to act as service animals for veterans who suffer with post-traumatic stress disorder. As Jim Kent reports, Super Dogs for Superheroes also includes goals to reach Native American veterans.
Becky Flanagan was an ammunition specialist during the first Gulf War and came home with PTSD. She's created an organization to match dogs in need of a home with veterans like herself in need of emotional support. Flanagan's own dog, Molly, is the reason she was able to adjust from the after effects of combat and get a job.
When you have PTSD, crowds can be very difficult, and a dog can be trained to do things that make you think about where you are, so that if you are in a flashback, they can snap you out of it.
And since the Veterans Administration doesn't provide or pay for PTSD service dogs, having an organization like Flanagan's is a huge plus for those who couldn't otherwise afford it. Maria Ramos is Lakota from the Pine Ridge Reservation. The retired physician's assistant and former U.S. Army nurse helps Flanagan with her training program. Ramos says there are many Native veterans, especially those who served in Vietnam, who need help.
Dogs are really understanding, I think, and they help people because then you have to care about something else.
The bottom line, says Becky Flanagan, is that pairing a service dog with a veteran suffering with PTSD is good for everyone involved, the veteran, his or her family, and their community. I'm Jim Kent.
The Washington Post reports Gavin Clarkson, a Trump administration appointee in the Bureau of Indian Affairs, resigned this week. The resignation comes after a recent scathing report on a failed loan guarantee program, which Clarkson had ties to. Clarkson was appointed to serve as Deputy Assistant Secretary for Indian Affairs in June with expertise in economic development and finances. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by Drumbeat Indian Arts, offering authentic Native American recordings and religious herbs, crafts, supplies, books, and a wide selection of Pendleton blankets. Holiday delivery on orders placed at drumbeatindianarts.com by December 15th. Support provided by Freedom Lodge. Is historical trauma a concern in your community? You can join our Historical Trauma Master Class beginning February 2018. Registration deadline is December 1 at freedomlodge.org.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood. An increasing number of Native Americans have been gravitating towards cities away from their reservations. More than 7 out of 10 Native Americans live in cities, according to the U.S. Census data collected in 2010. It's a steady trend since the time of the Indian Urban Relocation Program of the 1950s. As we'll hear this hour, there are a lot of reasons why Native people leave their rural areas and small towns. Sometimes there are more job opportunities in the city, or they leave for school. Still, there are also good reasons why people stay on the reservations or eventually move back. And maybe it's because they want to be close to their family or more connected to their culture. In this hour, we're focusing on the challenges and celebrations for both urban and rural living. Many people have different ideas for what those terms mean. And you are welcome to join the conversation, too. Call us at 1-800-996-2848. And what do you love about where you live? Do you live in a city or a small town? Do you like not being able to see or hear your neighbors? The number to join us is also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And to start us off, we're going to go to Seattle, Washington, to say hello to Janine Cominote. And she is the Executive Director of the National Urban Indian Family Coalition. She's enrolled Quinault. Janine, it's our pleasure to welcome you in for another hour.
Thank you.
And Janine, let's start with definitions. When we say urban, you know, what is your definition, urban living?
Well, there's like you said in your introduction, there's a lot of debate about what that definition means. But for us, when we define urban, we're really looking at, from a very technical viewpoint, sort of the primary metropolitan statistical areas that are around bigger cities throughout America. So, you know, Minneapolis, Seattle, Denver, Houston, San Antonio, et cetera. But for the National Urban Indian Family Coalition, we also recognize that urban is really more of, it's less of a definition and a label as it is an experience that a lot of Native people have had.
And can you break that down in terms of what you mean it's an experience?
So, you know, in looking at our communities, in our urban communities, you know, these communities in cities across the country, what we do recognize is that our Native people are fairly migratory. So there's a lot of migration between, you know, on the res, come to the city for a job, go back to the res for family. There's just a lot of migration between the reservation and, you know, sort of these bigger cities. And that's where urban becomes an experience, where you come to the city and you are experiencing urban living.
And I always wonder about that statistic because of what you just explained of going back and forth, and always wonder, you know, was that a time when there were a lot of people in urban settings? And then a month later, you know, that number changed drastically. And I think it might even be hard to just even pinpoint that at any point. What do you think, Janine?
I 100% agree with that. So, you know, one of the things we know that census is it's a faulty measure for Indian country. We know that census undercounts our people by anywhere from 10 to 15%. So, yeah, I mean, I think that there needs to be you know, a larger discussion within Indian country about how we're being counted. But for right now, that's the tool that we use, because we can't think of another one outside of the tribes themselves, possibly, you know, doing a sort of internal Indian country census to find out, you know, tribe by tribe, all 500 plus, to find out where their members are living, which is a massive undertaking. So, you know, for now, that's sort of what we rely on. And we do think that, you know, there is a lot of stability within these urban communities because of, you know, you mentioned in your opening the Relocation Act. And so the Relocation Act brought families into the big cities ostensibly for work, which often didn't come. And so, you know, you have multi-generations now of Native people who have been living in these big cities. So we do know there is a sizable and large population of Native people who are very sort of ensconced within the city that they live in.
All right. Thank you for that. Janine Kamanote is on the line with us today. If you'd like to ask any questions, or maybe you're ready to share a little bit about what it means to have an urban Native experience, call us at 1-800-996-2848. And how does that compare to what some people call rural living? 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And, you know, we're also going to focus on what it means to live in a rural area. But Janine, since we're starting with you and you work directly with the National Urban Indian Family Coalition, we're starting with urban. And so, Janine, what are some of the things that you feel that Native people face that maybe others don't in an urban setting?
I think the primary issue that we face living in urban settings is sort of a larger invisibility. So generally speaking, the Native folks who live in these big cities are very low in numbers. So usually, you know, anywhere between 0.5% to 3 to 4% of a population. But at the same time, face staggeringly high socioeconomic hardships, so like poverty or lack of transportation or underhousing or homelessness. These are all really, child welfare, these are all really big issues that Native people face at like giantly disproportionate rates. And what happens when you have that invisibility is that these are folks who, despite, you know, to give an example, in some cities, Native children make up less than 2% of the child population, but up to 15% of the children in foster care. So what happens with that is when you have that sort of invisibility, you get left out of policy and resource conversations. So I would say that, you know, that's probably the biggest issue that we face, is sort of this general sort of invisibility, because we don't have, we're not high in numbers. And I've actually had an elected official in a large city in America once tell me I don't have to worry about Indians because they don't vote. So that's kind of shocking unto itself. But that sort of gives you this window into one of the, I think, one of the bigger issues that we face as Native people who live in these cities. And some cities, you know, to be fair, are doing fantastic jobs in making sure that their Native communities are included in these larger sort of policy discussions.
All right. Thank you for that. And Janine, why do definitions matter, or do they, when we talk about what is urban, what is rural?
I think that's a big question. I think that when we look at sort of the definition of rural and urban, that what in my mind, what we're really looking at is reservation and urban as it applies to Indian country. And I think the biggest reason that the labels exist is simply because you have these organizations who provide these services in these big cities, and you have to be able to call your community something, because what often happens is that, again, to bring it back to sort of policymaking arena, is that policymakers often think if they're working with a tribe that they're providing for all Indians. And in big cities, you can have 200 to 500 tribes represented in a single city. So the label sort of urban Indian comes in handy. Really, it's sort of shorthand for whatever that local community is who lives within that urban setting. And I think it, you know, it also creates a, it, you know, we do have vibrant, culturally sensitive communities that live in these big cities. And I think it's just sort of evolved that way. But Native communities recognize that, you know, we are communities within these big cities, and we do practice culture, and we do a lot of the things that our reservation counterparts do, but that we do it in cities. I don't know if that really gets to the spirit of the question that you asked, but that's sort of where my mind took it.
No, I think you bring up a lot of great points, and especially, you know, still practicing culture in the city. Maybe that's something you want to talk about. Give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And, you know, anything you want to share about an urban or a rural experience as a Native American, 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And Janine, earlier this year, the report Twice Invisible: Understanding Rural Native America came out, and it challenged the definition of urban and rural. Any thoughts on it? And I understand that you felt some of it was problematic.
Yeah, there were some, you know, we've worked with First Nations Development Institute, both us and the Urban Indian Health Institute, on sort of the examination of some of those definitions. Part of the issue that we saw with that particular report, which has since been rescinded, it was that we couldn't replicate some of the how they were gathering data for that report. And it really, you know, what we've been reliant on, again, is sort of the census numbers, and looking at the census numbers, and for the Urban Indian Health Institute, you know, other numbers as reported into DHHS through their health systems. And that was really the primary piece that was challenged, because when that report came out, you know, when our folks in Minneapolis saw it, or the Twin Cities urban area, they were really taken aback, because that goes, it's counterintuitive to everything that they've been reporting for and their actual lived observation of their community for decades now. That's a really big community, and a lot of Natives live within sort of Hennepin County. There's like a 7-county region within Minnesota that is ostensibly urban. And then, you know, the First Nations report came in behind and said that only 16% of the population of Minnesota lived in urban areas, which is just there's some things that just didn't make sense to a lot of the communities in that report. And then there was some language in it that, you know, that we felt, and I don't think this was the intent of the report, but the outcome was, you know, perception is reality, that there was some problematic language about off-reservation and urban Native not being connected to culture due to our proximity to a reservation. And we know from our perspective that is untrue.
And we did reach out to the authors of the study at the First Nations Development Institute, but they were unable to join us for our broadcast today. Janine, is there anything you can say about the report? Maybe the main thesis? I can clearly see the points that you brought out as to how it could be problematic, but was there a main thesis that still holds true, or the point that you saw why anybody would look at this? Is there any value in that part of this report?
I think the the primary value to that report, and I, all of us in the urban sector, sort of, we totally stand behind this piece of that, is that what it really illuminated was a need for us to have this discussion in Indian Country about how we're defining where people live. Because again, you know, sort of shorthand for, you know, urban Indian is that, you know, when census came out in 2010 and said 78% of American Indians live off reservation, sort of how that was perceived was that 78% was urban. What we do know is that that's not true, is that that 78% are off res, and that could be, you know, a tiny town next to the reservation. It could be a, you know, a town of 2,000 people. So we do know, you know, that there's what this report illuminated is that that discussion and that sort of data mining does need to happen, and sort of parsing out, you know, who lives within these primary metropolitan statistical areas and who lives in sort of smaller cities and, you know, sort of an urban, not urban reservation, but more urban rural divide, and what that looks like in Indian Country. Yeah, and I think that's a debate that happens throughout America as well.
Sure. And recently at the UNM Law School, on a seminar on blood quantum, they were using a statistic, and it really caught my ear, especially knowing we were going to do this program, that they were saying a large number of Native Americans simply live three counties away from their tribal community. And so when you start thinking of that, you know, it still might be, you know, debatable. Is that a rural area or is it an urban area, or is anywhere off the reservation urban? And things can get tangled and twisted when we start thinking about all this. That's why we're having the discussion. What do you think? Weigh in on some of this about these definitions, and what does it mean to be urban? Do you have to be living in an urban setting for more than a year, or does 1 week make you urban? 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And Janine, what about some of the things that I know, if we were to push the statistics aside, things that we know and observe, you know, what does it really mean to be an urban native? Does it mean, you know, you have to learn a whole new way of life? Your thoughts?
Really, that depends on when you get to the city. So, you know, if you have just moved to, let's say, New York City from Pine Ridge, that's a giant culture shock. I think any time we have our rural or reservation-based natives who move to a city, I think that there's so much to get used to. There's this, it's so busy. There's so many people. There's so much to do. You're this tiny speck in this sea of humanity. So I think there's a lot to get used to. I think that for those of us who are third generation native, I think that that looks a lot different. We're just used to it because we've been born into it. We know our communities, we know our families, you know, like on reservations, we have families in cities who have been urban and leaders within the Native community for generations. We have elders who work within our communities and help guide our young people. So I think it really depends on sort of when you get to the city and, you know, sort of where you came from. And, you know, again, it just looks different if you're born into it as opposed to moved into it.
And I think there's three big things that came up in my mind when we talk about comparing the two. One, how do you eat? Two, how do you make money? And then how do you connect to culture? And I think when you ask those three questions on the urban side, you get certain answers. When you throw it on the rural side or reservation side, you get other answers. Folks, what do you think about it? Or answer how it feels to those three on either side, urban or rural. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We're going to go now to Fairbanks, Alaska, to say hello to Natasha Singh. She is the general counsel for the Tanana Chiefs Conference. She is a Stevens Village tribal member. Natasha, it's our pleasure to have you with us today.
Hello.
Hello. And Natasha, you've heard a little bit from Janine and her thoughts on an urban setting. Well, let's open up the door to a rural setting. Anything you want to share about how it differs?
So
In Alaska, it's probably different from the states because most of our rural settings are distinctly rural because you have to fly there or drive a boat to get to our rural villages. And so even though I live in what probably the rest of the nation would view as a small town of Fairbanks, it is an urban big city in Alaska. So my experience comes from kind of an urban view, although I do have the privilege of representing many rural villages in interior Alaska. And in Fairbanks, like what was said, the native population tends to migrate back to their villages, whether it be for hunting and fishing seasons or to visit family. We have that opportunity. So, from a rural perspective in Alaska and that experience, I think I can only talk about what I know from being out there during hunting and fishing activities or for what I'm told from my family and leadership and what I see their differences and experiences are. In Alaska, we have just the privilege of the ability to still live off the land. And I think that's the main difference between an urban experience and a rural experience is that our rural natives are, their backyard is their traditional homelands where their traditional resources are. And if you're lucky enough, you are taught from your family probably every single day how to live off the land and what that means. So I think there's a huge difference there from with that experience. With the traditional living also comes, a real recognition for traditional values and then your relationship to the land and the animals.
And Natasha, what are some of the things that you think you have to consider in an urban, in a rural setting that you don't in an urban one?
So the first major thing that comes to mind is public safety. I think like last year, my home was broken into and the police were there within minutes after I called them. In a rural village, you might have a really horrific violent act that the troopers aren't unable to respond to for days. That's a big difference. In the majority of our rural villages, there aren't law enforcement officers. And with the high rates of crime, unfortunately, in our villages, that causes some real problems for our village residents.
So public safety is definitely something to think more about. And there's more. I know you got more on your list, Natasha. We're going to pick it up right after this break. Again, folks, if you want to join us, 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We look forward to your calls and your stories, too. Give us a ring. Phone lines are open. I'm Tara Gatewood, host of Native America Calling. For the past 27 years, the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act has helped tribes bring back the remains of their ancestors that were housed in museum collections. On our next hour, we'll peer into this history and what's ahead for those who call upon this law. We hope you'll join us.
Silkado Jacano Sinegi, no Sassano Sennadin Hostado Yagun Hinahegi, Nehemado Nijepes or Jahna Niligi, Aja, Nahat Leho Nahadet or Lisot, Edo da Anahadet Ilis, Nisso Schlada Yoskas, Aj Yahanada Elne, Nidikit Naholo, Besh Behane, 1-800-318-2596, Besh and Sikase, go.cms.gov/native health. A message from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services.
Support by Ramona Farms. Skuk Dash. We are pleased to share traditional heirloom foods, wonderful additions to your family meals. For more than 40 years, Ramona Farms has revived ancient traditional foods, tepary beans, pinole, traditional wheat flours, cornmeals, polentas, and more delivered to your door from store.ramonafarms.com. Thanksgiving delivery available on orders placed at store.ramonafarms.com by November 15th. Tom Nye.
Welcome back. You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Isleta Pueblo, and I'm proudly broadcasting in my dike up, or moccasins. Today is the official Rock Your Mocs Day, and if you'd like to show us how you rock your mocs, send us a tweet at 1-800-99-NATIVE. And today's discussion is talking about urban and rural. There are different definitions of the two words, and one example comes from the U.S. Census. It calls a place an urban cluster when there are 2,500 or more people living there. And do you agree with that definition? Is your small town on the reservation an urban cluster? Call in and tell us how you define an urban or rural area. And do you call a place a city when you see major food chains? Do you call a place a small town when you see horses on the side of the road? The number to join our conversation about challenges and celebrations of living in both urban and rural areas is 1-800-996-2848. And with us today on the line from Fairbanks, Alaska, is Natasha Singh. She's a general counsel for the Tanana Chiefs Conference. She's a Stevens Village tribal member, and it's our pleasure to have her here with us. Also from Seattle, Washington, is Janine Kaminote, and she is the executive director of the National Urban Indian Family Coalition, and she is enrolled Quinault. It's our pleasure to welcome them back into the hour. And Natasha, you were giving me some things, thoughts on things you experience in a rural area that you don't in an urban setting. Anything more you want to add?
I guess differences in a rural experience, I think the education system, unfortunately, for our rural villages, the education funding can be limited. A bulk of the funding is used for maintaining buildings, and the energy costs in our rural villages are so high that sometimes the funding isn't going directly towards a student's education. It's going to the infrastructure for the education. So I think that's a big difference from your student's perspective, from a rural and village. I also think being in a rural village, whether you're able to travel to the urban centers or not, you're predominantly living in a population of Native people. And it can be a huge culture shock just traveling into Fairbanks or Anchorage and dealing with a population that a good chunk is very racist against who you are as a Native person. And I think that's a shock. I think a lot of village Natives experience when they come to town. And urban Natives in Alaska who grew up with the populations were used to it, and were used to coping with it and addressing racism.
I wonder how that goes for our listening audience. Give us a call. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And maybe you like both places. You know, this isn't all about negative things. If there's something you celebrate about both places, or celebrate a little bit more when your feet are in your community or when you're in an urban setting, you can tell us about it too. Stories are welcome. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And if you've had to make the decision to leave your native community and move to the city, what was the reason? What was your thought? How did it feel to adjust? Give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Or maybe the hurdle is moving back to a rural community and you've never been there. What have you learned? You can tell us too. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And Janine, I'm going to give you a moment too to kind of do that comparison. Are there things that you face in a rural community that you don't in an urban?
I think the sister from Alaska articulated it really well. I would imagine that public safety is a big one. I think that, you know, for our urban natives who move back to the reservation or into a rural area, I think that having the proximity to the tribe is something very much to celebrate, and having access to your tribe's culture. One of the things that happens in these large cities is that there tends to be some, for lack of a better word, sort of pan-Indian culture that happens, because we have so many tribes here. You know, Phoenix probably has more Navajos than anyone else. But there's also Pueblo people there, and people from the plains, and people from the southeast. And so our cultures are so different that there can't be sort of a dominant tribal culture in a city. So I think when you move back to the reservation, just having access to your own cultural traditions is a really powerful thing. I think conversely, that when you live in the city, learning about other tribal cultures is also really empowering. That take Minneapolis, for instance, there's a big, you know, celebration of Anishinaabe or Ojibwe culture, and also of the Dakota and Lakota cultures, which are also really strong there. So each city sort of has its, you know, Phoenix is Southwest, Minneapolis is sort of Great Lakes, the Pacific Northwest is, you know, here in Seattle, we have a huge Alaska Native population. So we have, you know, so there's sort of these themes of different Native cultures that sort of arise within the cities, and that those folks from that community, like our Alaska Native community here in Seattle, is a really close-knit, strong community that has a lot of power in the city, in our native populations here. So I think that, you know, there's a lot to celebrate in both. So I love that you said it's not an either or. I think that, you know, there's a lot to celebrate in both. I think from the sort of school perspective, and, you know, I've never lived in a rural area, but I would imagine that if I moved to a rural area, there would be some culture shock for me, in that I'm used to going out, and if I want to walk to Whole Foods, I can just walk to Whole Foods. Like, the lack of grocery stores, I think, would probably take me aback quite a bit. You know, not being able to just catch a bus to wherever I needed to get. So I think transportation is likely a much, much larger issue, especially for folks who may live in poverty and may not have cars. So I don't, you know, if you live out in the middle of nowhere, how do you get places? So I have to imagine that those types of considerations would be a big shock for me.
All right. Thank you for that. And maybe you want to share a little bit of your story. Give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Why do you like living where you live, whether it be in an urban setting or a rural setting in your tribal community? You can share. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Do you think you have to have a certain kind of personality to live in either place? Does it take a certain personality to be an urban native? What about a small town native? 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And we look forward to your calls. Any aspect of this, maybe you want to take on the issue of stereotypes and how they play out in both urban and rural areas. Our guest, Natasha, talked a little bit about racism. What do you think? Does it change once you go to a different location? 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And I think another part is just the cost of living. And Natasha, I'm going to turn to you for your thoughts on that. When you are in a rural area, it always seems that prices are higher than they are in the city for certain things. And then on other things, it's really low. And talk to me a little bit about just the cost of living and how you think the two compare.
I think everything in rural Alaska costs more. There's nothing that costs less in rural Alaska. My mother-in-law was just in town shopping in Fairbanks yesterday, and she was telling me how our favorite pilot bread crackers, they're like kind of round, flat crackers, everybody loves them, are like $12 or some ungodly amount in Caltag, whereas in Fairbanks are selling for like $5. But that's just what they deal with on the day-to-day. For all their groceries are higher. All fuel is extremely high. It just costs a lot. Any transportation, I mean, sometimes getting from the village to Anchorage is more than going to Hawaii. From an urban city in the lower 48. So, I mean, it's just extremely high cost of living, and there's very limited jobs.
All right. Thank you for that. And maybe you want to make that comparison. Give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. We're going to take a call. We're going to say hi to Nancy in Sioux City, Nebraska, listening today on KILI. Nancy, thank you for your call. You're on air.
Thank you. And I say hello from Sioux County, Nebraska. I am a tribal member living in a border town of the Oglala Sioux tribe, and I'm listening to Keeley. And I just wanted to comment that I grew up in the rural area here and moved to the urban center in South Dakota. And then I came back in my retirement years. And because of the deep population of the rural area in northwest Nebraska, especially native population, I find that it's important to pay special good attention to indigenous relationships with white people. And that can be difficult.
And Nancy, any advice for people who are, you know, adjusting to either place and trying to figure out, okay, how do I go rural? How do I go urban? Any advice, Nancy?
Well, it takes a special intention to live, like was mentioned before, the travel issues, the food security issues. You have to pay good attention to those before you decide to go live in the rural. And there's great sustainability movements out there to get good advice from. So that's what I would direct people to.
All right, Nancy, great to hear from you. Thank you for giving us a ring there in Nebraska. We're going to go now to Belen, New Mexico, to say hello to Brandon, who's listening on KUNM. Brandon, thank you for your call. You're on air.
How are you doing?
Doing good.
I got to say, I love this little town out here. It's a lot different than living in the big city. As I was saying earlier, your neighbors, we all take care of each other. We all care about one another. And that's what small town living is we all make sure we're all taken care of. Neighbors help out neighbors. It's a real good place to live. I would suggest to anybody, you know, if you can go live in a small town, it'll be the best for you.
All right. There's Brandon's opinion. What's yours? 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And Janine, anything you want to pick up on? Go ahead.
I was just, listening to the calls. And I think that there's a lot of, I think that the caller from Nebraska made a really good point that we've heard quite a bit about. And again, the sister up in Alaska brought it up too. I think that you know, when you look at the issue of racism and how Native people, and particularly in border towns, are having to deal with it, I think a lot more in your face. And in Alaska, I think it's, in my experience, that's one of the few places, Alaska and Montana are actually the two places where I experienced direct in-your-face racism, which completely blew me away because I'd never experienced it before. I think that's another really big sort of difference between, you know, the cities and either border towns or mostly border towns. I don't think racism necessarily exists on the res because it's all Indians. But I think that that's another really big difference. The racism is, it looks different in the city because you're only one of many people of color. And so the racism tends to be against big groups of people, like not just Indians, it's Black people and Latinos and Asian folks. So I think in that way, there are some key differences as far as that looks between cities and mostly border towns.
All right. Thank you for that. And something else Brandon raised of small town communities taking care of each other. And I wonder, what about raising kids? How does it differ between urban and rural settings? Maybe you want to tell us a little bit about that. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Let's take a call. We're going to say hi to Robin in La Couturier, Wisconsin, tuned in on WOJB. Robin, thank you for giving us a ring. You're on air.
Hey, bonjour, and thanks for having me on the show. I'd like to share a little bit about, I was fortunate my family was able to get some land off the reservation. Now, we're only about 30 miles off of the Bad River Reserve up here in Wisconsin, you know, so it is real rural, real farm and local community base, so we all look out for each other out there. But I did notice, like, when I went off to college down in the city, you know, the opportunities were there. The racism was kind of not as much either because we, you know, as a more diverse community in the city. But the importance of where I'm coming from is I learned a lot about, you know, working a little bit harder for things because it is a tough living, though, and especially when you get off the reservation into rural communities. I know a lot of my family, they, you know, we value our work ethics a little bit more, and we try to, you know, look out for each other a lot better. Because we don't have a lot of the funding and stuff like the tribes do within, you know, with the housings and stuff. So I always wanted to share that with the audience that, you know, it's not necessarily a bad thing to move away from your reserves either, reservations and stuff, because a lot of us that did grow up off the reservation, we learned a lot more of the values of working a little bit harder to have things. And it is, I'm grateful because my family did do that, and we'll always have that homestead that we, I like to call it reclaiming the land, you know, except using their tactics to do so. And, you know, and we'll always have that, you know, in the long run.
All right, Robin, great to hear from you there in La Couturier. And we're going to go now to Dillingham, Alaska, to hear from Greg listening on KDLG in Alaska. Greg, go ahead. You're on air.
Yeah, thank you so much. You know, I mean, living out here in Dillingham, I've just been really lucky. It's super expensive, no doubt. I mean, I paid $17 for a DiGiorno pizza yesterday just because I really wanted a DiGiorno pizza. But, you know, there's something about the sense of community, and Dillingham is really special. I lived in big cities in my life, and, you know, like, there's something about this place. There's a reason why so many fish come back here and so many fishermen come back here every year. And, you know, it's really a sense of community and what's going on in this town. And in Bristol Bay itself.
All right, Greg, thank you for sharing a little bit of your life with us. 1-800-99-NATIVE is a way you connect with us, or sending us a tweet with your thoughts. And what about technology? You know, what is the difference? Talking Wi-Fi, I'm talking cell reception. Give us a call, 1-800-99-NATIVE. Let's take another call. We're going to go to Erica in Spokane, Washington, tuned in on KSFC. Erica, thank you for your call. You're on air.
Hi, thank you. Good morning. You know, a few callers ago was speaking about racism and made the comment, there's no racism on the reservation. And I just wanted to respond to that. Native Americans are not immune from having racist feelings. I have many white friends who have married into Native families and feel very, very strong racism directed at them within the, you know, culture of the reservation. So I think if we're going to talk about racism, which I know this program isn't about that, but we need to include that as part of the dialogue. Just wanted to counter that one point. There's not immunity from racism.
All right, Erica, thank you for your call there in Spokane. Natasha, any thoughts on what we're hearing from Erica?
Sure, absolutely. We're all humans, and there is, of course, racism in our rural communities. And I think even tribal members experience that racism, whether they're they have different races, either if they're half black, half white, they can experience that. I think the difference, though, with racism is the power dynamic of where you are. In Alaska, the predominant society and those in power view are white, and Native people are often viewed as the lowest of the low. And we feel that, and we know that. And we see that played out in institutions, whether it be education or criminal justice. So I think we have to remember the power dynamic of racism. I think as oppressed, colonized people, we often mimic unhealthy behaviors of the dominant society and take on those attributes of the oppressor against our own people and others. So I think, of course, Native people can be racist just like anyone else.
All right. Thank you for that. Janine, anything to add?
I would echo the power dynamic. Racism is, to me, is more about power as opposed to prejudice. So I think that I would, again, disagree with what she said.
And I threw out the question about raising children. I know we're getting tight on time here, but I want to hear your take on that too. Janine, go ahead and start us off. How the two differ, are there pluses and minuses when it comes to raising children in either an urban or rural area? Go ahead.
Well, I would think that, you know, the education systems in urban areas get just a ton more funding. And I think, again, the sister up in Alaska brought this up, that that the big cities really do get a bulk of the funding for education. So the schools are bigger, the curriculum is more, not, I don't want to say advanced, but it's a different kind of curriculum, I'd imagine. Teachers probably get paid more. I think that, you know, from that vantage point alone, that, you know, there's probably some advantages to education systems in cities. That being said, though, Native students in urban settings experience racism, experience prejudice and bigotry within the schools, and that the schools themselves aren't addressing, the school districts themselves are largely throughout the country not addressing the needs of Native students. So I think that, you know, for those Native students who attend BIE schools on reservations, I think that, you know, sort of being surrounded by other Native kids and having Native curriculum sort of integrated into your daily living and having culture integrated, I think there's a massive bonus to that, that our Native students who live in the cities don't experience and largely don't experience. There are some exceptions throughout the country, but for the most part, I would say that, you know, to me, that's probably the key difference. We actually just came out with a paper today on urban Indian education where we examined that very question.
Go ahead and give the context on if somebody's ears perked up on that one and they want to follow up, where do they find that and the name of the report?
Indian Family Coalition today released, and the press release will come out tomorrow, the first paper of its kind that we know of looking at the impact of education on urban Indian students. And we went to six different sites who we believe are practicing best practices within these large cities. and did an examination and really looked at the history of education and how education was designed to sort of keep natives down. It's a tool of the colonizer. So we really looked at the history, and then we looked at best practices, and then we came up with a list of recommendations for, you know, how we could begin to address sort of underachievement by Native students and embrace culturally contextual education within the urban setting.
Well, that is definitely something I would like to read. Look forward to getting my eyes on that. And Natasha, anything you want to share about raising a family or just bringing up kids in either place, plus or minus? Go ahead, Natasha.
Sure. So I think from the village perspective of raising children, I think that is just like the best part. One of the best parts of village living is raising your family and having your cousins, a door next door, just everyone's, so close, your aunts and your uncles, the elders, they just have such a, every day they're assisting and raising you and developing relationships. So I think it's just one of the best parts about growing up rural is having that close family connection and just growing up in that way. But I'd also like to say raising a family in Indian country has a lot to do with basketball. And I think it would be an awesome show to just take this a one step further in how your basketball experience is different from being a rural or urban Native basketball player, because you could just break it down in so many different ways.
We might just do that. And why don't you get the conversation started on that one? Send us an email if you have thoughts on that. Comments at NativeAmericaCalling.com. That's going to do it for our program today. Thanks to our guests, Janine Kaminote and Natasha Singh. Tomorrow is the anniversary of the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act, and we'll be tracing the path of this law and what it still means today. We hope you'll join us for this conversation. Our executive producer is Art Hughes. Senior producer is Monica Brain. Associate producer is Andy Murphy. And Marino Spencer is our engineer. Antonia Gonzalez is the anchor and producer of National Native News. I'm Tara Gatewood. Thank you for tuning in again. And we look forward to adding your voice to the conversation, as well as taking a look at you rocking your mocks. Tweet it to us now at 1-800-99-NATIVE.
Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians, working to empower K-12 schools to strengthen health and safety policies through the School Health Index self-assessment. Schools with 50% or more American Indian or Alaska Native student enrollment are eligible to participate and receive funding. Information available by emailing Jamie McDaniel at jmcdaniel@aaip.org. Program support from AmeriCorps Vista. AmeriCorps Vista members make a difference in the fight against poverty while earning money for college and gaining valuable skills. We have rewarding service opportunities around the country, focusing on economic opportunity, healthy futures, education, and more. It will change your life and the lives of others. Information at AmeriCorps.gov/VISTA.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.